So Mary Beth's talk is titled Soil Chemical Changes on Two Forest Watersheds After 20 Years of Acidification Treatment.
You know, years ago when we used to go four meetings, I ended up having the last talk on a I had the last talk on a Thursday afternoon, so I guess last on a Tuesday isn't too bad. I'm going to be talking about a favorite research study of mine. I did not actually start this one, but I've been very involved with it for 20 plus years. The Furneaux Watershed Acidification Study was started in 1989, and we've been adding ammonium sulfate fertilizer to the watershed at basically twice ambient rates of nitrogen and sulfur deposition, as shown here. It's a paired watershed study, and we've been monitoring solution chemistry, stream chemistry, soils, and growth over time. And you can still buy this book from Springer if you want that. It covers the first 15 years of the acidification study. We have two watersheds, paired watersheds. The treatment watershed is a young stand. It's now about 40 years old. And the reference is an older hardwood stand. They're both hardwood stands that was regenerated around 1910. So it's quite a bit older, but these two watersheds have been hydrologically and chemically very well matched prior to the initiation of the study. And indeed, their soils are also, were at least mapped as being very, very similar prior to study. There is some soil sampling that's gone on, and I'm going to be talking about the soils results today. In 1988, prior to initiation of the study, there were 15 soil pits per each of these watersheds, and the reference watershed is 96 acres, and the treatment watershed is 83 acres. Very well-described profiles. They sampled by horizon. Unfortunately, we never got the data, most of those data back, nor did we get any of the samples back. And hopefully there's no one from EPA in the room, but they really annoyed me, but I wasn't there at the time, so anyway. So well, we have samples basically from three pits from each of the watersheds that have been archived and are available for retesting. Then I've sampled the soils on these watersheds at these same 15 locations three times, 1994, 2002, and 2010, and I've also been sampling by horizons, by depth, which are approximately the same as the horizons that were sampled in 1988. I'm mostly going to be focusing on the three sample dates that I have been responsible for sample collection. So what's happened? Well, first of all, over 20 years of treatment, the treated watershed has received just a little bit less than 1,000 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, and the reference watershed, it's been about 200 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. Yes, we do get a lot of nitrogen in West Virginia. Sulfate's been added. We're not going to talk about sulfate today, but there's some interesting comparisons with our sister study up at Bear Brook in Maine. But over 20 years, 300 and 225 kilograms of calcium have been exported from the treated and from the reference watershed, and high levels of export of magnesium as well in the stream water. So these are exports from as measured at the weir. So what's happening is that, and this graph, the line here shows the initiation of treatment. This is nitrate concentration in stream water. We've applied the ammonium sulfate fertilizer, and actually within a very short period of time, we've seen the nitrate concentrations in stream water from the treated watershed increase while they've remained basically unchanged from the reference watershed. Interestingly enough, we've seen a similar pattern with calcium in stream water and magnesium in stream water. Again, this is when treatments were initiated, and we see a significant increase in stream water calcium concentrations on the treated watershed. No significant change on the reference watershed, and these data are up through 2009. We've seen increases in We've seen mobilization and decreases in calcium and magnesium in soil solution below our major horizons. And so what we've seen and what this graph represents is a mobilization and a depletion of exchangeable soil calcium and magnesium from the soils as measured in solution chemistry. We've even been able to change the stream water pH from the treatment watershed, which is down here, from around 5.9 down to about 5.3. This took a lot longer for us to see any real changes than some of the other constituents, particularly the nitrate and the cations. So what's happening in the soil? Well, we remeasured in 2010. Soil acidity, these are the four main horizons. And what we see is that slightly higher within the treated watershed, which is the red bar. For some of the horizons, but not for others, but none of these differences are significant, statistically significant. So what about total nitrogen? We've put a lot on over time. Again, we see that some of the total, for some of the horizons, total nitrogen is higher on the treated watershed than in the reference watershed, but it's not statistically significant. This is after 20 years of adding nitrogen, fairly high levels. What about calcium? Exchangeable calcium is slightly lower on the treated watershed, but it's not statistically significant. So my first reaction was to panic and assume that I'd screwed up. And what's wrong with my soils data? They've been very consistently collected, even by the same people. And although I am slowing down, I still know how to sample soils. They've been analyzed by the same lab. About a year ago, I was invited to participate in a project. Ruthie and I and John Campbell at Hubbard Brooker, the lead, the acronym is QUEST. It's called Quantifying Uncertainty in Ecosystem Studies. If you've been coming to these meetings for a few years, you know that every couple of years, Ruth will pop up and say, "Where are the error bars on that nutrient budget? How do you calculate uncertainty and variability on a nutrient budget?" So that's gotten me to thinking about variability. It's an interesting experience, and QUEST involves a number of sites across the country that have long-term nutrient data, gauged watersheds and nutrient cycling and nutrient budget data. So I'm thinking about variability and trying to come to some conclusions, or starting to look at, actually, about the variability in soil chemistry. One of the graduate students mentioned yesterday in the poster discussion that soils are really variable. She was quoting Daniel Hillel, who said that in one of his soil physics books a few years ago. She wasn't quoting him, but he said it, and I'm sure we've all said it at some point. So I'm interested in the spatial variability, because I think that to some extent that's swamping out any possible treatment effects. But I also think that I might be affecting, the treatments might be affecting the variability. And these data are some that Lindsay has put together, Lindsay Rostedt's put together from across a range of Forest Service experimental forests. But these are climate or temperature data for the Ferna experimental forest. And what it shows is that our temperatures have increased over the last 50 years, and indeed over the last 20 years. So Frank Gilliam at Marshall University has looked at nitrogen cycling in the treated water, in these watersheds, and he's come to the conclusion that there's a lot of spatial variability. Obviously, he's not a soil scientist if he's just now coming to that conclusion, but in particularly in nitrogen processing. And there are some sampling sites right along this ridge that are where there's almost no nitrification happening, which is really rare in our soils. So he's suggesting the spatial variability limits processing of nitrogen. But then looking at the spatial patterns in the treated watershed, watershed 3, he's also suggested that the treatments as it has become more nitrogen saturated, which we can argue about nitrogen saturation later, that the spatial variability has actually decreased as a result of adding more nitrogen and continuously adding nitrogen to these soils. So I've kind of following in Frank's footsteps, I've started looking at the spatial variability using coefficient of variability, which is what's plotted on the y-axis in each of these, for the treated watershed on the y-axis and for the reference watershed on the x-axis, for a number of variables, again, for those three soil dates that sampling dates that I've been responsible for. And what I noticed is that the spatial variability in calcium, exchangeable calcium, is quite a bit higher on watershed 3 relative to the reference watershed. And that is the biggest difference, or the biggest, the most significant difference that I've seen so far looking at these variables. I mentioned that we have a very, very few samples from 1988. So I plotted just a couple of things for all 4 years. There are no error bars because these are not means. These are individual observations. So in 1988, the percent nitrogen in the 0 to 10 centimeter depth of the mineral soil ranged from about 0.2 to 0.5. And if you ignore this one, it doesn't look too bad. They all seem to be converging at a single point, but on the treated watershed, there's one where it's going up. So even something simple like pH, the changes over time are not, on these individual sites, are not necessarily what we might think. We have some of them that are going up over time. We have some of them that are going down over time. Oops. And some of them that are going up and down over time. So what's next? Well, I'm going to get somebody to take these arrows out of my back, and I'm going back out to spend a little more time looking at the spatial variability, but also seeing if we can evaluate the effects of the treatment on our variability and help explain some of what's going on. All the solution chemistry data tell us it's happening in the soil. We're not picking it up in bulk chemistry, so either there's not an effect, the variability is so high we can't detect an effect, there are processes, microbial processes in particular, and weathering processes that are confounding us, or they're confounding me, to be honest. So I have a lot more work to do. I would welcome any suggestions or ideas that you might have, particularly for thinking about spatial and temporal variability. Paired watershed studies are not always the best way to be looking at changes in soils over time, but we know what's happening. We just can't seem to pick it up in the bulk soil chemistry. So with that, I would welcome any questions if I have time. Dale? Dale's question or suggestion was that because we've clearly acidified the stream water, that it may be the preferential flow paths which have acidified, and the bulk soil we may not be picking up the changes in the bulk soil, and that's a very real possibility. These are the soils are about a meter deep. They're not terribly deep. They're very rocky. It's entirely possible that what we're able to get out of the ground is not necessarily what is seeing all of that. There is a proposal that some folks at Virginia Tech and Coweta and myself representing the Ferno have put in to try and look in a great deal more detail at the interaction of the hydrology and the nutrient movement, or nitrogen in particular movement. So hopefully we can get a little bit more into some of that. We do see that nice pattern in our soil lysimeters. So wherever, and these, I didn't mention, but these soil pits are located near, adjacent to our lysimeters. So it's showing up in the lysimeters, but it's not showing up in the bulk chemistry. Any other questions? All right. Thank you.